Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte clear liners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you could pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
You can host the best backyard barbecue when you find a professional on Angie to make your backyard the best around. Connect with skilled professionals to get all your home projects done well. Inside to outside, repairs to renovations. Get started on the Angie app or visit Angie.com today. You can do this when you Angie that.
Oh, tonight we got them. Goldie the Sulk and JC.
The chemical, disgusting, and it starts right now.
Oh, welcome back to another episode of A Typical Disgusting Display, a podcast for writers, by writers, who hate writing. I'm used to hearing that theme song in 1.25 speed because that's how I listen to our podcast. I mean, we crush in 1.25 speed. It's almost like I can't tolerate us normal speed,
but I know, it's 1.25. Right?
Just if you're listening, put us on 1.25 and we sound like we know what we're talking about. So yesterday, we talked last week, colonoscopy. Colonoscopy was yesterday as we're doing this podcast now. And it was also JC's birthday yesterday.
Oh, yeah.
Which we should have talked about the week before, but we're still bad at that spatial relation.
No, your colonoscopy is like Trump. It just eats all the news.
way better to talk about, really.
It ate a large instrument yesterday.
Sorry.
First joke of the day.
Giving it to Goldie, but then you just swooped in.
How was the prep everyone talks about?
The prep was interesting. It's funny. I sort of had a change of hat in mid-prep, because everybody tells you, oh, the prep is the worst. You know, the prep is the worst. And then I started thinking about it the day of, because you're supposed to not really eat stuff. You drink clear liquids. And then I started thinking,
have you ever drank a clear liquid?
Yeah, I drink way more water than you, pal. So much more water. I'll go on a water off and eat it. Where's your water? Hold it up. Hold your water.
Oh, well, I'm bigger. I'm blurring the background. You can't see it. I mean, it's a giant Yeti.
That's a BBW, big black water right there.
God.
So the prep was not that bad. And I started to think about it during the day, like, wait a minute, this is going to like clear out everything. I should be looking at this as a positive. I try to do this every day and it doesn't work. Yeah. So now I have something automatically doing
it. Did it work? Because I could just see you being the one guy where it didn't work.
I know. Well, it's funny you should say that, because I when I was talking to the doctor's office beforehand, they're, saying any questions you can ask. So what the question I had is, I said, what can I expect when I start this prep? Like, what is the timeline? Like, how's it going to work? And the woman said, like, within an hour, you should feel the effects of the prep liquid. So I take my first prep drink at 5 o'clock in the afternoon. And the drink is...
Is it like saline water?
It doesn't taste good, but it's not terrible. It's sort of like sickly sweet. It's like this little bottle of liquid, and they gave it a flavor, but it's kind of gross.
Gross.
So I'm like, okay, within an hour. So sure enough, like Goldie says, we're coming up on an hour. Nothing is happening. And we go past an hour and nothing is happening. And I'm having the thought that you had, Goldie. I'm like, oh my God, I'm the one guy where it's so impacted.
Well, I would also, in my mind, I'd go, am I senile now? Did I not drink the prep?
No, I had
did
it.
I spill it on.
For that reason, I had the bottle next to me to confirm. Like, yes,
I would have videoed myself drinking the prep and emailed it to myself.
Right. I did do this.
Memento.
But then, like, about an hour or 10.
DM-to. It's not great. Sorry.
An hour 10 in, it started to have an effect. And it continued. And you have to take a second prep liquid. Ooh. At like a few hours later. So I did that and it was basically all night. It wasn't bad. Like it wasn't like a cramped, terrible diarrhea.
Like you couldn't sleep though.
Right.
You couldn't sleep, which kind of sucked.
Yeah, because you were texting at like 10.
I know, that's late for me.
Why is every medical thing at like 5 a.m.?
I know, it stinks.
Is that so, literally?
But it was, you know, what was a little unsatisfying about it is I picture like what's built up inside me, right? And so I picture it pushing everything down. So I think like the first wave is going to be like a bunch of bricks like that are left in there. But no, it liquefies everything.
Oh, God.
So everything was like I was like a girl peeing.
But I mean, were you like, oh, there it is, my 8th birthday cake? Was it like going through the striata of like
the timeline?
Cretaceous and you,
right.
Yeah, like cutting open an old tree.
An old tree.
No. It was nothing like that. It was all liquid. And then it basically turns to, at the end, it's clear liquid. So you're done. You can tell that you're done.
Oh, yeah.
But that wasn't, it was not as bad as it had been built up. For me, the worst part was like every time when you go to the doctor and they have to do something, when you're waiting in the doctor for a doctor's office for a half an hour in your little stupid gown.
And you're cold.
Yeah. And they're putting, do you need another blanket? And you know, it's all that shit where you feel like you're 90. But then, you know what, as everyone said, the procedure started, they hook up those drugs and they're like, okay, you're going to feel a little something in your arm. And just the next thing I remember as Goldie, as I told you, I was being hustled into a waiting car like Reagan when he had been shot.
But were you mumbling unspeakable things for which you'd be canceled if anyone else heard them?
Maybe. I don't know. But here's the thing. Here's a creepy.
That's my fear is I would just start saying horrible Tourette's-like things got out.
You probably would.
No, I know.
Yeah. Well, the creepiest thing, I have zero memory of putting my clothes back on.
Oh,
like,
wow.
I cannot remember at all.
Did
and also
you?
I was very unsteady. So it's incredible to me that I would have been able.
How long did it take to wear off?
The drugs?
Yeah.
I mean, they basically go away pretty quickly. Like once I got in the car and I was heading back, like they were pretty much gone.
And did they find anything in your beehole? Any polyps or anything?
They found a polyp.
Aww. Yeah.
There's one polyp.
What does this mean?
That's another weird thing is like
the polyp just sitting there going, you've got a friend in me.
You've got a friend in me. Well, that's the weird thing.
Singing
was
Randy Newman songs in your butthole.
I love LA.
Us polyps have no reason.
The weird thing is they told me about the one polyp as I was being, again, hustled like Reagan out into the car. Like, I don't know how
they
would
offer it to you in a baggie.
Yeah,
here, did they remove it?
Take this home for your dog. Yes, they removed it.
Oh, that's
and I
good.
Guess they're going to, you know, tell me if it's fine. But they said this is totally normal. You know, like everybody has a polyp or, you know, it was fine. But again, I don't really remember. So it's possible. I don't know.
Is there a
congrats
follow-up?
On being done. Now you,
yeah.
I'm done.
It's like day zero, you know?
I know. As I
like
said,
being reborn. This is like a religious thing.
I know. As I said to you, I was anxious to put it behind me.
Oh,
and I did.
Yes.
And I was very happy that I was able to put my prep stool education to work.
Now,
wow.
As you were going through this prep in the bowl, did you find any Johnny jokes?
Oh, you know, yes, well done. You know I did. It was a stream of consciousness.
I wish you had videotaped all this and that, or had just kept record on it. That would be the podcast, like you under anesthesia.
Oh, that'd be great.
Oh, God, I know. Or as you said last week, euthanasia.
Yeah, that was so great.
It was just It was weird. It was the, I was the first appointment of the day, which I was glad of because, you know, the equipment's all clean.
Sure.
That's a positive.
What time was that at?
The appointment was scheduled for 8:00. I had to be there at 7:00.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
Thank you
for... So it was an early morn. Mm. Yeah. So again, listen, if there are men of a certain age out there, go do it. It's not... It's not like
don't be like an advocate, like anyone's going to listen to you.
You know, folks, come on. I've learned a lot.
How dare you?
Grown a lot.
Oh my God.
Let me tell you, men,
you're shameless. You're not the face of this. Come on.
I'm the ass of this. I'm not the face of this, but I certainly am the ass of this. Men of a certain age, do yourself a favor. Get yourself checked. Please.
You're having thoughts.
We want you around. My God. Your family wants you around. Probably. Take my family out of
what
it.
What an inspiration.
Those families. Yeah, see? I want to be... I want to be the
diarrhea and took some drugs, and now he thinks he's like a fucking
folk, let me tell you something about what I learned in my medical journey.
He laid there while someone stuck a probe up his ass, and now he's telling us all what to do.
It was very similar to an alien situation. You go into a very white, well-lit room, and you know, you go out, somebody sticks something up your ass, and then...
Well, there is the theory that everyone who says they were abducted was molested, and then they've recreated this whole thing in their mind to justify... Like
what happened
to cope?
Yeah,
right.
Yeah. Well, you can be the face. You can be the face of that if you want. You want to advocate for that? He's not interested anymore.
No.
Do we want to let's talk a little bit about the premiere of Curb, because we all watched it. The final season premiered this weekend, and we all watched it last night. So Goldie, I was texting you both. He was really reminding me of you in this episode last night, and I found it very funny,
it
as
hilarious.
Usual. So I'm anxious to hear, because sometimes when something reminds you of yourself, you tend to sort of like dislike it. So I'm wondering how you felt about it.
I mean, like, it's an honor to be compared to the guy. He's a genius, but I know everyone's just doing that because we're bald and like
no.
Angry, and he's
and angry.
Converted it into money and,
like, and funny.
I've done nothing with it.
Please.
You know, so it's I'm the cautionary tale of your hair and not converting it to anything. But
well, here's the encouraging thing, Goldie. I was thinking about this last night because I was literally watching it thinking he reminded, you know, you reminded me of him, vice versa, whatever, however you say that. And I was thinking, like, what's Goldie's curb? Like, what would that be? And then I thought, you are significantly younger than he was when he started Curb. So that's a positive. Like, there's still, it's still out there for the taking for you. If you
well, no one knows fun. Who I am or
well they
cares,
start
so.
They're starting to more because of the Ted show. I mean, you it's made true. A good splash in that show. You were very funny, memorable,
yes. Extremely
bald, angry. Like, I'm telling you, there's a pathway for you to have your own curve.
I agree.
I mean, I would love to be a bald, angry, humiliated idiot in anything. But they're, you know, two or three people they always use, and they don't call me in. And so
I thought a loose framework for your curb could be framed around an unsuccessful podcast where you're like this funny like guy gaining yards for nobody, like, you know, week after week.
Yes.
And so that, and of course, the show would not be about the podcast. You wouldn't really even see it. It would just be that would be like what you're doing in your life, and you're very like dissatisfied because it's not getting any traction.
It's some nice outside perspective on what you think my life is. An unsatisfying failure.
But
thank
no,
you.
But you would take you would take your very good job out of it, and it would just be like, this is your Hail Mary,
my fine job.
Oh, please. Your excellent job. Your top
okay.
Your top 1% job
sure.
That you have. Anyway, so tell me what were your thoughts on the pilot? Because I know, JC, that there was a very funny scene where Larry was yelling at his Siri in his car, which is very funny. And they use your favorite word.
Yes. Very relatable moment, too. It's
like, yeah. Yeah, so Goldie, what did you think of the premiere?
Yeah, there's just some great meticulously observed comedy, the Siri thing. I mean, because they're all really, the best things in that show are implicit stand-up bits, like the thing about the glasses being too wide.
That was great. And
falling off is something I've dealt with.
Somebody with a fat head.
I have pairs that just don't work.
Right.
Wearing the weird glasses, you know. Trying to be cordial at that party, but not being able to do it and getting preoccupied with some very tiny thing that only you're aware of and being unable to let it go. Of course,
the Brookie situation, which was a funny thing to say over and over again.
But it's also the sort of never feeling in place in those situations and the inability to generate any fun moments for yourself at all.
Right.
What's supposedly a fun occasion and just enduring it.
Yes.
And then
being told at the end that you didn't endure it correctly.
Right.
Well, yeah.
Yeah, of course. Something like I've dealt with as well.
And there was a funny carryover from last season where you folks remember the whole season was them putting together this show of like young Larry, where Larry was going out and pitching this show. And then through a bizarre series of events, he was forced to cast this terrible young actress in one of the leads of the show. And
I relate to this.
Everyone was sort of horrified by who they cast. And then, of course, coming into this season, the funny reveal is she's the breakout star, which I thought also was kind of a funny take on Hollywood. And she is instantly embracing the spotlight. She's on Kimmel. She's throwing everyone else under the bus, saying she's responsible for why the show is funny. And so that's going to be a funny through line for the season. The couple things that made me laugh, like I was crying laughing. Of course, it's a very me style of thing when he was saying, wait, you're Tutu? No, I want to be Tutu. Yeah. We can't have two Tutus. It was very funny that they were going to negotiate this party situation like it was apartheid. That was very funny.
Some really good story planning in that, like the dog in the pants and then the $10 bill going in the toilet.
Oh. Like, that's hilarious.
That's really intricate.
Yes.
You know, like that's very hard to create and think of. And you can't, you know, like there's no way that's not pulling from your life. That's not like I was having this argument about a tip. You know, it's like, that was another great thing is how sloppy you get in a hotel room. And you justify in your head, but I'm going to give this person money.
Right.
And then
it's in the
to
toilet.
See the flip side of it. And then, you know, that money, like that's creative work and not just what people think we do, which is like something happened to me and I just wrote it down.
Right. Right. Yeah. Right. And to spotlight that moment, because it was very funny when the hotel maid comes in and rolls her eyes at the room and Larry's like, what? Yeah. Like that was a very funny attitude for the hotel maid to have. But
it didn't go anywhere, but that little thing of the guy who worked for the hotel saying, I'll walk with you. And and that walk, and they just show that walk, which is, I hate, obviously, when people do that, everyone does, where you go, just tell me where it is.
Yes.
Yes.
And I thought, like, it was very funny that, like, and it wasn't said aloud, which I think even made it better. The silent walk together. And also the guy was walking a little too slowly for Larry. So, like, Larry had to slow up. And they're walking down these long hallways. And it's just, like, a painful silence. But, God, Larry's so funny. It continued to be what it was. And it made me sad that this is the final season.
Well, like, look at the things on HBO that you like, and I've said this last week, but it just feels like what we do is on its last legs. Like you go, okay, there's Curb. You know, some people like Bill Maher. It's not really for me. I don't hate it, but it's just been on forever. John Oliver has kind of been on forever at this point. You know, we're hoping for like a new House of the Dragon, but that's sort of like a, you know, juice made from other juice.
Yes.
You know, Succession is gone, and it's sort of sad. I mean, it's like we're all getting older.
Do you know if he made the choice to end it, or did they cancel it?
Oh, I'm sure he made the choice.
Okay. Yeah, they would just do as many as he wanted, I'm sure.
Right. I'm sure. Yeah. I'm very sad that this will be the last season. But it started off so funny. Yeah. So again, great job. Great job. And they, you know what? I respect that Larry, like he made a nod, you know, there was the end where he got arrested for handing out water in a Georgia voting line, which I thought was a funny, like, you know, funny way to spotlight that ridiculous law. And then they ended with his mugshot, which was clearly supposed to be Trump's mugshot, which is like, you know what? Good for you for like sticking in this a little political sort of nod at the end. So, you know, another A+ from them. Not a surprise. Looking forward to next week.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
CarMax is putting peace of mind back in car shopping by putting you in the driver's seat to find a ride that's right for you. Because at CarMax, we believe you shouldn't just settle for a car. You should love your car. That's why every car we sell is CarMax certified quality, so you can be sure with upfront pricing that's the same for every customer. So don't settle. Find love at first drive and start shopping now at CarMax.com. CarMax, the way car buying should be.
Something I'm not looking forward to, Johnny Jokes.
Whoa, from Hollywood, here's Wet Johnny's.
Ooh. Oh boy, Wet Johnny's indeed. I have no idea in what order I'm going to do these. Okay, maybe you heard about this. Scientists, you know, those eggheads in lab coats. Scientists have determined that picking your nose may lead to Alzheimer's.
Oh.
Well, it's been nice knowing you. A little easy light jab on the way in here. The Justice Department will be cracking down on the sale of e-cigarettes to minors. From now on, if you sell to anyone under 18, it's statutory vape.
Ah. Oh, good.
And you know what they do to vapists in prison, right?
No, it wasn't. Did you write that right after picking your nose?
Stop riffing on my jokes. Here's an interesting
story. He's just pulling brain out. Those aren't boogers.
That's from the colonoscopy. Here we go. A new state mandated tampon dispenser in a Connecticut boys' high school bathroom was torn down in just 20 minutes. 20 minutes. Sounds like it was somebody's time of the month. All right, and since we've been going to the well with these the last few weeks, and this week will be no exception, record rainfall swept through Southern California last week. It was so wet in Southern California.
How wet was it?
It was so wet, drenched Calabasans huddled together under Kim Kardashian's tushy. Okay. It was so wet, Bradley Cooper had to use his maestro nose as a lean-to. Yeah. It was so wet, Shamu escaped from SeaWorld on foot. It was so wet, the internet went out in Chatsworth, and porn actors were forced to have a 4G orgy.
When did you take this prep again? Was it an hour ago?
It was so wet.
Oh, wow.
What?
Britney Spears checked into the Betty Ford Clinic just to stay dry.
Okay. Oh, wow.
Well, I, like you, am having an all jokes must go sale, and so there's a few more than normal here, but I hope you'll enjoy them. Well, after recent storms, San Francisco is at risk for life-threatening floods. And if evacuation is required, the mayor urges citizens to act courteously and obey the traditional rule of women and theys first. Okay. Southern California has also been devastated by over 10 inches of rain. Mm. Officials are warning about the dangers of mudslides in Santa Barbara County, Ventura, and Alex Sulkin's toilet.
Topical.
Well, the economy is chugging along. Last quarter, 355,000 new jobs were created.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, one of those was looking inside Alex Sulkin's butt.
Hey, wait a minute. I'm sensing a theme.
This is a norm. Again, yeah. this is an old style joke. You don't make this today.
I love it.
Okay. Lizzo will soon go to a jury trial over allegations she harassed her dancers. Ooh. Addressing the allegations, Lizzo said, "Dancers, all I saw was a giant cartoon ham."
Oh.
Well, Vince McMahon is out as head of the WWE after being accused of serial harassment, including defecating on one of his employees' heads during sex.
Ew.
Oh.
But don't worry, he's found a new job managing Lizzo's dancers. McMahon denied the allegations and apologized for any perceived misconduct. Still no apology from Alex Sulkin to his doctor.
Awesome.
Yeah, sure. That was an honor. I'm glad my butthole could provide some jokes for you this week. All right. So actor Scott Grimes is not here. Yeah, Scott Grimes had a scheduling conflict this week. We don't know what that was. Perhaps the Community Auditions All-Stars. That's a Boston area joke.
Okay, cool.
So we decided we're going to just kind of like do a little bit of, is this something? Maybe answer a couple emails along the way. And Goldie, I thought we had sort of discussed answering emails, but then,
sure.
in the 4 minute run up to the podcast, you sent us like six stories. So that was talk about prep time.
Yeah.
That was not enough.
Well, we
can talk. We can talk about them. Yeah, of course, we can talk about them. So, do you want to answer emails first, or do you want to do? Is this something?
Well, okay. Why don't we be professional here? Why don't you just announce we're answering emails? We'll do a couple emails if JC has them ready, and then we'll do these.
Okay, you don't have to take that tone. You don't have to take. I know this is your.
Tone police.
I know this was the time that you know. Listen, don't take it out on me. Whatever's going on at home, I don't deserve this tone.
What was going on at home was I was fine until we had to start this podcast.
There we go. That's the show. That's your curve.
What makes a life a good one? Is it the adventure you have? Or the friends you find along the way? Maybe it's pursuing your passion while striving to protect, defend, and save what you believe in every single day. So what makes a life a good one? In the Coast Guard, we think it's all of the above and more. But you'll have to find out for yourself. Visit GoCoastGuard.com to learn more.
All right, JC, let's. Can you pick an email and we'll talk about it?
So I'm gonna. This one was sent at the beginning of the year. It's. It was a quick question from Quirky Quilts, and the topic.
A quick question from Quirky Quilts.
Yes, it was tough for me to say. The subject is Goldie's artwork. Okay. Hi, Goldie, Alec, and JC. I recently found your podcast and enjoy binging the back episodes. I hope this doesn't sound too intrusive, but I love art and I am dying to know about the green-hued pool, possibly art piece featured in most of Goldie's backgrounds. Is it a photo or a painting? I can't tell, but I love what I can see and would like any info on it. Thanks, you guys, so much for entertaining me this winter while I'm in New England freezing my butt off. Have a great week, CB. Thank you, CB.
I'll take this one. Oh. No, I'm just kidding.
Go. I'm happy to address this. Okay. So I think that's normally, sometimes I record out in my office.
Yeah.
And that is a painting that I purchased from an artist who lives nearby named Woodrow White. And I met him when he was an art student. He was a kid who lived on the street. He is the child of Wayne White, who is a very gifted artist who does these word paintings that are quite famous. And Mimi Pond, who wrote the first Simpsons for Tracy Ullman, and she has books out. So he's their kid. He's also a painter. He did a book with Dave Eggers where he did the illustration. It's a children's book. And he recently, I believe, did all the character design on the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles movie. So you can look him up. I don't know whether he has anything for sale. I mean, my hope would be that that thing is just hanging there and now worth $9 million. I don't know.
Yeah.
But it's a very nice painting.
Yeah. Do you have any paintings by Jeff Picasso?
Art is just so weird because
it is really weird.
You know, you just go, I don't, you know, someone names a price and you go, I don't know.
Oh, Terry Rembrandt. All right. Well, that question is answered.
Yeah. Okay, I mean, cool. It's not like you where it's just all this childish shit hanging behind me.
Right, hey, I'll have you know, this is a scene from Star Wars. How is that childish?
Not like a 9-year old. I've matured and can appreciate craftsmanship and not just, I'm not just seeking to, you know, this comfort in the same things that succored me when I was 9.
Succored. And while we have this break, I want to remind folks out there, men of a certain age, please,
oh God, yeah,
please get your butthole.
Yeah, they're gonna call their doctor because of you.
Please,
because of you. All right, let's hit the next email.
All right, so this email is from Pierce Mitchell. Thank you, Pierce. I'm going to read an abbreviated version of this. So, hello, my name is Pierce Mitchell, and I'm writing to you from Southern Michigan, where weed is legal and the roads are shit. I have been wanting to write an email for a while, but like a true writer, I hate writing. Let me start by saying thank you so much for this podcast. I cannot express that enough. I recently graduated from film school and had a 4-hour round trip late at night. Mondays were always a better drive with your show. I can confidently say that your show kept me awake and alive.
Oh,
so
nice.
He goes on to say so many nice things, but
skip those.
There's part of your curb.
I'm going to go into the first question, and I appreciate you, Pierce, for wanting to know a little bit more about my story, but maybe there might be a question here. Yeah, here we go. So number one, how do shows like Family Guy hire? There's many questions, I feel like, in this.
Yeah, Alec.
Where are they looking, and is it all through agents? Hillman's story was really great to hear, as he is closest to my age, but we don't all have friends that are working at Family Guy, and I also didn't go to Harvard because in high school, I acted more like an Alec than a Goldie. I smoked pot, not debate opponents.
Well, that's an interesting question. Okay, so how do we hire on Family Guy? Well, first of all, yes, there is some value in knowing someone who works on a show, because I knew that Goldie was hilarious, so I knew that he would be a great fit for the show. And we've been over the hilarious Kaiser Soze hiring story of Goldie, where it wasn't just me like, hey, here's my friend, hire him. It was Seth MacFarlane himself, who ultimately read Goldie's spec script, and Goldie writes under a different name, Julius Sharp. And Seth came to me and was like, have you ever heard of this guy, Julius Sharp? Julius Sharp is John Goldblatt. So
I love that.
That was how Goldie got hired. So all credit to you, Goldie, that you didn't get in like as a Nepo baby.
Right.
But in general, it's just as simple as we read spec scripts, you know, different agents or just people will send in spec scripts. And if there's something good, you know, then we investigate that. It's not a complicated process.
I would also say, though, yeah, that right now, with the industry being what it is, it's not like there are so many openings.
Yeah,
just like, no,
that's true.
It's we have to level with people that this is a really, really hard time to be trying to do this, even for people who have done it for a long, long time.
Yeah.
And are good.
Yeah.
Now, would you guys recommend that he moves to LA?
Yes.
Because, you know.
Well, yeah, because there are people who moved here who are trying to do it. Like,
yeah,
you've got to try to do the thing you want to do. But the question is, like, what's your appetite for pain?
Right.
You know, and what's your appetite for failure, and what's going to happen if it doesn't work?
Yeah.
So, yeah, it'd be great. And Southern California is awesome. And, you know, the roads are probably no better than Michigan, and we have legal weed. So you might not even notice a difference.
But, right.
But you have to, I mean, at a certain point, if you're serious, you got to go where they're doing the thing you want to do.
Yeah.
But that doesn't mean it's going to work.
Yeah, no. That's true. And there's no promises in anything, but if you were around people and you made friends and, you know, are a likable person, people remember that. And it's all about, I mean, this is a very cliche thing, but knowing people is a very helpful thing to get any job. I mean, that's how I got the family. That's how I got the job. I knew the guy before who was doing the job from working in New York.
Yeah, and no one in show business is going on monster.com and LinkedIn to find candidates.
Right.
It's all done through people knowing people. Yeah. All of it.
And that's not to say that it's not possible. It just means somehow get yourself out there, be as great as you can and as likable as you can.
Yeah, I mean, also, I mean, I hate to recommend this because it just gives me flashbacks, but you know, if you want to be a comedy writer and you come out to LA, like, you gotta, you know, maybe go to some fucking stand-up clubs or an improv class. Not because, like, doing stand-up or improv is the greatest path to becoming a writer, but you will meet 10 people at each place you go to. And that's what happened to, you know, that's how Goldie and I met at a stand-up club. Yeah. That's how, you know, I've met a few people that I ended up working with is because we were stand-ups at the same time. And you remember them, you know, remember somebody. We remember people like, you know, Dan Cronin and Chris Regan, people we did stand-up with who got up on stage, and Viner. Mm-hmm. They get up on stage and they're funny. They make us laugh and you make them laugh. And then down the road, you're like, yeah, I want to work with this person.
Well, also, I know they're funny. What do you bring to this other than wanting to do it?
Right.
It's important.
Because everybody has. Yeah.
Everyone like wants to do it.
Yeah.
But what are you bringing that Family Guy doesn't have at this point? Which is
well said.
It's tough.
Yep.
You know, it's whether it's a perspective, it's a style of joke, it's some kinds of stories, you know, from Michigan that are like you could put in Peter Griffin's world and have him do. But to just say like I'm funny and I like to do it and I know form, that's all great. It's not going to put you at the front of any line.
Yeah, right. Maybe a story from Michigan is going to be the guys concoct a plan to kidnap the governor. Didn't that happen in Michigan?
But you know what I'm saying? You know, what's the show that's taking place in Michigan, right? Like, I don't know. So that's already you go, hey, if I could write like a really specific Michigan comedy rather than trying to write a Family Guy, maybe that's something. I'm not saying to do that. I'm just saying thinking you might want to start employing, though, is what do I know that they don't know?
Yeah.
And how can I express it in a way that they don't already express it?
Yeah.
But
to the point where they go, God, I really want this voice on my show.
Yeah.
Not that voice. But yeah.
No.
Michigan is a weird state, by the way. It's like its own country. So much happens there. There's such a, you know, you think of Michigan, you're like, oh, Ann Arbor. It's an elite educational center. But then the Upper Peninsula is like crazy. Whatever. You can have stories from Michigan that you bring out, I think is the point. Like bring your own special thing.
Yes.
We have a writer, Matt Pabian. He's from Michigan. Very funny guy.
Yeah.
Yes. All right. What other questions does Pierce have?
Okay. So the second question is this Matt Rice's email, and will he respond if I ask him Grateful Dead questions?
Well, by the way, We're not going to give you the answer to if that's his email, but your instinct about Grateful Dead is the right one. And that's actually a good another good clue to this, because people know out here, like, if you're trying to get in touch with them and you're asking for advice and what do you do, we know that you want a job and it's your way in. An interesting way in with somebody who loves the Grateful Dead is to talk to them about the Grateful Dead. And then they're gonna bond with you in a different way than they bond with other people who are coming to them with, like, please read my script, please get me on a show. It's like, if you can talk to Matt Rice about, you know, a great help slip Frank from San Francisco in 71, that's gonna bond you to him. Yeah. See, I know a little bit about the Dead too.
I was like, what did he say?
I wanted to get that in there.
Cool. Maybe he should email you and you'll do an enormous
and
favor
here's
for
his
him
email.
Because you guys like the same song.
One
it's
song.
A start. It's a start. All right. What else does Pierce
okay,
have to say?
Number three, how did you guys get your first writing jobs? I think you guys have spoken about this.
We talked about that. Please listen to our old episodes. I think both of our first writing jobs were on the Craig Kilborn show.
Kilby.
And we both got it through friends, with the help of friends. And then, of course, having your own packet that's funny and that Craig liked really helped. But we did have a connection that helped us get in there.
I mean, just sort of think about when you're outside of school, the people that you connect with, you become your own class. Like, you guys start coming up together, everything starts happening. Some people get left behind, but then they get pulled up by their friends as they keep going. But you can create your own class of people as you get older. Just, you guys have been going to school basically this whole time.
Yeah, you know, you brought up, Pierce brought up in a funny way, like, that he was more of an Alec in high school than a Goldie. There recently, when I was back at Connecticut College in the early 90s, there, you know, they every year they would release that sort of college rankings. You remember those, of course.
Oh yeah.
And Connecticut College was actually decent then. It was like in the low 30s, so back when, like, the small liberal arts schools were, like, a little more hip. So I decided this year, I'm like, I'm going to go on and look again. So, Goldie, good news for you. Columbia was 6.
Ooh.
Now. And Connecticut College, 160. We were after some schools that, like, I could not believe. We were after, like, University of Florida, like SMU. We were just way down. Good so schools. I don't know what the hell happened.
Well, the larger point about this is it's great to have degrees. It's great to have school. And it's great if that is a way to gain the courage to do this, is to be in a safer environment. But the kind of the sad truth is that I don't know anyone who has schooled their way into this where I go, wow, like, what they learned in school has led to a line to them being successful in show business. And a lot of people, including, you know, Seth MacFarlane, they're autodidacts. They just learned a skill and they developed a passion and they just did it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that, you know, you at a certain point, you know, they're, education can be a crutch where you just go, like, I'm doing something which is productive and it's in the direction I want to go. But at a certain point, you just have to kind of start doing it.
Yeah. And since I went to the 160th ranked school, can you explain what the fuck is autodidacts?
Self-taught.
Auto.
Self.
All right. Thank you.
Yeah.
I know what auto means. I couldn't quite hear what you said.
Yeah, right.
Oh, autodidacts.
Oh,
yes.
Oh, yeah, obviously. Yeah, yeah.
Of course.
Now I know what you're talking about.
Yeah, got it.
Okay, number four. For JC, how did you get into where you are now? Should I stop writing and sling a boom pole?
I'll field this one. I'm kidding. Go ahead.
Well, I mean, I got here because I am a musician, and I went to Berklee College of Music, but I always knew that I wanted to be an engineer. I thought I was going to be an engineer in the studios making hit records, and I thought that was the path that I was going to take. And then 9/11 happened. All the studios closed, including the studio I was working at. And I was desperate for work. And somebody that I went to school with, I had heard, started like a post house. And that guy owed me a favor. I called him up and I said, I need a job. And he said, I can't guarantee you a job, but there's a show that just started. We just started recording season one. If you can gain this guy's trust, the showrunner, the guy who created this show, then you have a job. So I went in to this studio, didn't get paid for a couple months. And then one day, Chris Gifford, the guy who created Dora the Explorer, said, well, what about her? I love her. Let's work with her. And so I started on season one of Dora the Explorer and stayed with them until the very end. So that was a 15-year run.
Wow. And,
yeah.
The silver lining of 9/11.
I know. I got very, you know, but it is about, you know, I went to school with this guy. So it was someone I knew. And I wouldn't say necessarily he was the most likable person, but I got along with him really well. And he gave me this opportunity. So, and because of that, he also hired a guy named Aaron Deeker, who was also on Family Guy.
He was?
So, yeah. He was the guy I replaced.
Oh, Aaron Deeker.
Yes.
Yeah, sure. Autodidact. Right.
Oh, my God. AD.
AD.
So, it's, again, about it's who you know, how you treat them, and... But here's the thing. If you don't have a passion for audio, then don't do it because it's a slog.
Also, and boom, holding that pole is really hard. And
I've never even done it.
On the sets that I've been on, those are the first people to get fired.
Oh, yeah.
Because if that thing comes into the shot once,
that's
then
true.
Everyone's just like, what the fuck is wrong with that person?
It's an art form, especially with lighting and stuff like that. I mean,
I would say you want JC's job rather than holding that pole. That would one of the last things I wanted to do on set.
Yes.
Followed by a boom shadow. Yeah, I just saw a boom shadow on an X-Files that I was watching. Every time I see a boom shadow, it registers with me. I'm like, yeah, somebody fucked up.
They're not
but
fired.
They didn't care. They were too lazy to reshoot.
Yeah. So anyway, yes. If your passion is writing, you stick with writing. If your passion is audio, I mean, I would never recommend somebody go my path unless you are obsessed with it. So.
Right.
And that might maybe true for any path, but anyway.
Does Pierce have anything more to ask of us?
Number five.
Oh.
What is your process for finding Johnny joke material?
Oh, well, Goldie called me out this week. It was the colonoscopy prep. They all just washed out into the bowl. Yeah, no, for me, I just often click on CNN and I'll, you know, scroll through their stories. And obviously most of the world events are a little too heavy, but they do sometimes have those lighter stories. And you find little things, you know, on Instagram or stuff like that, and you just find a silly little story. I don't know what you do, Goldie.
That's interesting, our approach to the news. You know, I used to read the paper every day. I would read multiple newspapers. I mean, now I just go to the Drudge Report, which I think is a good aggregator of what's going on, like what are people thinking about. And then I go to the New York Post, which is like, what are idiots talking about? And the New York Times, which is what are smart people talking about?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And then if I still need a premise, I do a news search for sex because there's always some, you know, big closer material there, some study about sex or something that,
awesome.
And that's basically it.
Wow.
That's cool. That's a little more in depth. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yes.
I mean, most of it is just the time pressure.
Yes.
Makes the joke.
Yep.
More than anything.
That's true. It was so wet.
Yeah.
Well, JC, if that's the end of his questions.
Yes, it's the end.
Well, thank you, Pierce.
Pierce
Mitchell, for that email. And we're glad that you enjoy the show and that we kept you safe and alive on those commutes. But let's pivot here for a second, because we were talking before we started. It was your birthday yesterday, JC.
Mm-hmm.
And Stu, who is away, put up a very nice tribute post to you
with
some great pictures, including the first photo, Vava Voom, which appeared to be a picture of you from Penthouse. So will you explain how the hell that happened and why the hell we haven't been sent signed copies of that magazine?
Okay, well, it was in Penthouse Forum, which is they made this small magazine out of the
Thinking
stories,
Man's
right?
Penthouse.
Yeah, exactly.
So, like, if you're a reader, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
I didn't. Even
I'm
know.
Not like one of those pervs. Yeah. I'm a man of letters and jerking up.
Right. So I was playing a show in New York, and this guy, I was like getting a water at the bar, and this guy started talking to me.
That's when they pounce.
Exactly.
She wants water. She must want to be in the penthouse.
This guy started talking to me, and I was sort of like, ugh, you know. I just got that weird feeling, but then I decided, you know what?
I found out he worked for Penthouse.
No, I didn't know
and
yet.
That weird feeling went away.
No, that wouldn't comfort me, I want to tell you.
No, I know.
So I just decided, you know what? This guy seems like a nice guy. So we just talked a little bit. And then later on, he said, hey, you know, I'm the editor of Penthouse Forum. Would you be interested in doing a profile for our magazine? And I was like, what? Because, I mean, I only knew, first of all, I didn't know it was a separate magazine. And then I was like, well, let me just
ever check. Think about guys you don't know splooging?
put a year on this.
2000, I don't know, maybe eight, nine, ten.
Yeah.
Oh, the age? I don't know.
No, I'm saying
2022.
Oh, that's funny. So anyway, we did some research. He ended up being he was the editor and
a legitimate pornographer.
Yeah, absolutely.
And then it happened.
Well, it was a very cool photo.
Thank you.
And it was nice of Stu to post that material.
Oh my God.
All right. Terrific. Well, Goldie, thankfully you have backed up the Is This Something truck this week. So why don't you hit us with a couple of topics and maybe we can talk about.
So yeah, again, these are ideas that we just as a writer look at and say, could this be something, whether it's a movie, a show, a series,
right,
or is it nothing?
Yeah.
We don't know. But this is sort of like, you know, if you don't have some giant autobiographical thing you're trying to do, or you don't have some intellectual property, look around, you know, maybe you'll find something. So here are some things that I thought, and we don't have to do them all. First thing is this Prince Charles health situation, which I'm not trying to be kind of morbid by picking away at this, but you have this man who's waited his entire life to be king.
I know.
And finally gets it, and it appears he's seriously ill.
Yeah.
He has two kids who don't seem to talk to each other.
Right.
Yep.
Estranged.
Don't get along. You know, their mother died and he mistreated their mother.
Yep.
Right.
And very in publicly. A time when the value of the royal family seems at its absolute nadir. Mm. And my thought is that, like, we're in a decline of everything, right? Like, this is an institution that used to mean something. Here's a guy who his whole life was kind of looked at as a nebbish and not enough to do it, and then he gets sick. So, you know, it's hard to say, like, well, that's really funny and it's a comedy.
Right.
There is the comedy of the expectation, the want, the desire. It's the be careful what you wish for story.
Yeah.
Yes.
And that could be funny. I think obviously you take the cancer out of it and make it some other nightmare that he realizes when you become king, you know, a certain thing happens that's terrible, that ruins your life, but not a terminal disease.
I would disagree about the cancer thing, because I think that, you know, the threat of it, the stakes are very high. Cancer is something that, you know, unfortunately is in too many people's lives and they're aware of, and it's sort of shorthand for danger, you know, that.
Yeah.
It's also like a save a cat thing.
I know it's not fun to think about, but then, you know, could you get into these scenes of, well, I'm the prince, I'm surely getting this treatment, and then he's thrown into the same healthcare system as everyone else.
Yeah.
You know, and you think, it's like a doctor going, like, it doesn't really matter if you're king or not. This is the treatment and it sucks.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And the king's losing his hair, the king's losing weight, he's frail, and it's the modern day Daenerys Targaryen.
Ooh,
you know, coming to the dinner table. I don't know exactly what it is, because I it's hard to pin down the tone of whether you want to do a sort of like epic about the decline of everything and the sadness of it, or you just, is this a nice story about reconnecting? Like, it's ultimately within this empty royal palace, but it's this, the prince who's living in California, maybe he's become a surfer or whatever.
Yeah.
You know, he's on a skateboard. He's a 45-year-old trying to be an 18-year-old.
Right.
And then he gets called back home to take care of his dad.
Oh, that's
I kind of like that. I sort of like the story of the guy who's driven to be king. And then when he gets it, this terrible thing happens. And maybe he reevaluates what he wants to do as king. Like maybe it's a nice comedy.
Well, here's the thing. I mean, you open it on some narration and along these lines is here's the thing. There's only one way to get to be king. Someone dies.
Yeah.
Right.
And unfortunately, this time it's looking like it may be me.
Right. So,
you know, is this succession where you then in his like looking at these two sons, he's got the one son who's like him, who's been striving and trying to do everything, who's bald, not really super highly regarded. I don't think Prince William's looked on as a stooge or anything, but I don't think there are people who just love him. Like, he's not someone who engenders, he doesn't have a tremendous amount of charisma. And then you've got Harry, who's tried to be this celebrity Hollywood thing, hasn't really worked out. And he says, you know, hey, this thing's up for grabs.
Right.
You know, who's with a woman who's more in the Real Housewives vein, who would probably want to be queen.
Right.
You know, who he seems more driven by his wife. But I don't know. Is this a movie to you or?
No, I mean, feels like it could continue after that, too. Let's say he does die. And then there's, because you're introducing the sons, that the eldest is to be king. And they have this beautiful princess that everyone loves. And then he is just like, okay, well, what about me? You know,
well, it's funny for her to say, well, for her to just honestly say, like, look, I've never brought this up, but what if it was me?
Right. Well, it is succession. As you lay it out, it's the true succession. It's interesting. I think it's a show more than a movie.
Do you think it's a comedy?
I think it would have to be a comedy.
There is. I'm not saying this is funny.
Okay.
But in the haha sense, but there is something comical in that, like, the queen dies, there's this royal funeral, and then, you know, like a month and a half later, there's this other funeral, and everyone's has to get worked up again to the same degree.
Yes. Yep.
No, that could be a show. You know what? You've convinced me.
I mean, would the thing is, yeah, I feel so morbid talking about this because these are real people, but now I'm in the fictional universe, fictional universe. From a dramatic perspective, would you say, like, well, this king should die in the show? Or would you say that
eventually, maybe,
or
end
does
of
he
season
go
one
into remission and recover improbably after everyone's made this succession plan, which is succession kind of.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah. And, I mean, I think it's funny to have him live when everyone has prepared for him to die.
Yeah.
You know, right. And that might be better for a show. But yeah, there's definitely that is something.
Yeah.
For sure. That's something.
I think there's a lot. Yeah.
That's something.
Yeah. So this, I have a take on this next story.
Oh, good.
Okay.
I'd be curious to what you think. So the headline was basically the New York Police Department built this police robot.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
And it was patrolling the subway stations. And after 4 months, they just decommissioned it. They said it just wasn't working out. It was weirding people out. It wasn't effective. The idea was that this thing was, whereas a traditional employee requires a pension and bathroom breaks, thing never takes a minute off and it's just patrolling the subway. So my take on it is it's RoboCop Ted. The robot was doing this one thing, but it displays enough humanity that for whatever reason, the person in charge who programmed the AI can't bring themselves to decommission it because as he pulls out the battery pack, it's like, what are you doing? You know?
Yeah.
Hey,
yeah.
You know, and it can't make it as a cop, but it's going to try to like make it in the big city.
Right. It's still alive, but just no longer a cop.
Yeah. And it's kind of disgrace, and it's cop. It has like maybe one or two buddies left on the force.
Nightscope. It's called Nightscope.
Oh, the robot's actual name.
Yes. Like K-N-I-G-H-T.
And people hate it because.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They think it was like trying to narc on them, and it needs a rebrand.
It's super creepy.
Right.
Yes. A rebrand. Yeah. Like
I mean,
Ted.
You could just put a piece of like. Of duct tape over its camera, and it would be that's the end. Like, it's no longer a cop now. I can't
that's
see
true.
It. Yeah, no, that's funny. Like, I love the idea of this thing that was built for one thing, couldn't do it, but is still alive, still here, still
and
kicking.
Sort of
and the
feeling...
question is like Ted, do you say, well, you know, it had a girlfriend?
Are there multiple robots or just one?
I think there were multiple ones, but I think in this,
in
you
your
would
show.
Say there's just one because, unless maybe as a complication at the end of a season or in an act two in a movie, you would go, oh, it turns out there's another
one
and it's evil
something.
And it's,
oh,
right. Know. They have to
that
fight
being said,
out.
I have been a part of, when I say been a part of, I was invited to help punch up at least two pilots that I can remember, which were. A science genius creates a robot that's his roommate, and it didn't really work. I think that for some reason, the failing as a cop makes it better to me because it's already known and it has some fame and people have an opinion about it. And it's a robot you've seen.
Yeah.
Right.
It's funny because in the story, there's a picture with the mayor and the mayor's like proudly standing with the robot.
Yes, with his heart, like a half a heart.
Yeah.
I know. I was looking at
the mayor would be a good character in this show.
Yes.
The mayor who stuck his neck out to get the robot on the force in the first place and is now just hates the robot because he's completely humiliated by it.
And
it's a buddy
this is a
comedy.
Show I think about all the time because I used to watch it when I was a kid and I enjoyed it and no one ever talks about it, which is Benson.
Oh,
yeah.
Benson was
a governor
who was kind of a goofy dork.
Yep.
Yes.
And then Robert Guillaume played Benson, who was his stand-up aide, who was the competence, the sort of power behind the throne. But is there some sort of like Benson element to this of, you know, this mayor who rose up sort of on the coattails of Trump? Like, he's pretty crazy.
Yeah.
He seems to just speak his mind. And he also seems to maybe be tied in with some unsavory criminal type financing and elements.
Yes.
And that the robot, I don't know whether he thinks the robot knows all this and he's trying to figure. I mean, this could just be an episode of like, you know, trying to figure out how much corruption the robot is aware of. So he takes the robot out to dinner. You know, he's like, I'm going to take the robot to a nice place and treat it like a human. You know, and he's out with the robot at like a Tavern on the Green. And I don't know.
Well, you know what this feels a little more like? It almost feels like a very interesting episode of Black Mirror.
Oh,
like where it could be funny, it could be all that, but it has to have some kind of nightmarish quality to it, which it feels like is already built in, you know, just by having this weird sort of lifeless yet somehow alive robot who records everything you do and say, knows everything about you, but it's been disgraced itself. But it can still do some real harm.
Yes.
But could it be a multicam?
Yeah.
Could it be the robots in front of the audience? Someone's working it with a remote control. You have like Bill Burr, someone doing the voice who's like, hey, what do you want from me, pal?
It's like Elf.
Yeah. I like it. Whatever. A multicam, you know,
like
we're
it's
fans.
Friends with a former cop robot. Like
the
city is paying $500 a month, and that's not what a roommate costs now. $1,800 a month for the robot to continue. I don't know.
I think this is something.
I think it's something,
but we don't know what it is. We don't know what it is, but it's something.
I think it's a comedy, though.
Yeah, I like the elf
because the robot also looks so. I mean, the character design is incredible. It's done. The robot looks very stupidly funny to me.
Yes. Yeah. You sent that picture. It is very funny.
It's great.
Yeah. All right. We can do one or two more.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So this was an idea. Like, people are angry because Netflix is doing an Alexander the Great thing. Mm-hmm. And in it, Alexander the Great kisses a man. And he's gay. So my thought was, is there a sort of sweeping either movie or episodic comedy in the ancient world where everyone is gay and there's just like one straight guy who doesn't fit in, who doesn't like going to the vomitorium, who doesn't like indulging in all the stuff, and he's disgusted. I mean, obviously it's a statement on our time on the decadence of everyone.
Yes.
But he's in a world where, you know, it was that great scene in The Holdovers where we think everything is new because, and we invented it, but they were doing it all in the past.
Yeah.
And that they were just all gay.
Yes. And the straight one is like the fish out of water.
Yes. And it's weird. I mean, I don't want to, I think to veer in a commentary on it and to just do a one run relationship's not that interesting to go like he's in effect the quote gay one in his
right.
Time. Right.
But it's the, like, imagine to me, it's more like imagine a person who didn't want to be there being stuck in Studio 54.
That'd be me.
Yeah. No, it's great. And it calls to mind a show that I love, our friend Gary Jannetty's show, Vicious.
Yeah.
Right. Where it was Ian McKellen and Derek Jacobi played like old queen gay roommates, lovers. And it was relentlessly funny. And it just feels like if you can take some of that energy and put it in the ancient world, like that's already funny.
Yeah, I would say the tone is, you know, it's like people getting fitted for their toga.
Yeah.
Like not being able to find a toga that looks good on you.
Right.
Yes. Like the first thing is
arguing about like phalanx formations and where people, how people look best, you know,
not being able to get into the vomitorium.
Right.
Like it being so crowded.
Like a velvet rope kind of thing.
Yeah,
like...
or working at the vomitorium.
Right.
Was like a privilege.
Oh my God.
You know, and sort of having access to whatever the royal house is, but not being of it. You know, going to the Colosseum and not being able to find the people you're supposed to be with.
Yes, I love this. I love this.
Great.
Yes,
that is great.
I want in
on this
show.
You said it was entrance LVII, but you were all the way at entrance XVI. You know, like come on.
Yeah, and then you know, being at the show in the Colosseum, and you know, it's like I know him. You know, you're watching and. Someone's in a gladiator fight and you're just like, you know, Daryl.
Yeah.
Like it's a guy who was supposed to do something for you who
ghosted
called
it,
you know, said he wasn't, he couldn't show up for some reason. And then he's in a gladiator fight. Like, I guess what I'm saying is like, it's almost a sitcom in ancient.
Yeah.
I love that. And you know, it's funny. I Fox now has a show called Crapopolis.
Oh yeah,
where I watched.
Is that what this is? I haven't seen it.
It's an animation. Right?
No, because I like you. I think a comedy set in that era is there's a lot there. But I didn't love the Crapopolis pilot. I haven't given the rest of the episodes.
That's about
a chance
gods
yet.
And such, right?
Yes. So it's
that's
more
the
about
thing. It's this is the minutia of daily life.
Yes,
I love, and it's live action. This would be live action, right? Because isn't Crapopolis animated?
I mean, you would have to I guess you would have to say like, "Hey HBO, do you still have those Rome sets somewhere that aren't
they totally
used?
Do. Like,
could we save some money by did you know on this Alexander the Great show? Did you keep the sets?
Yeah.
Yes.
And can we just use them? And did he keep the wardrobe? Can we use it?
There's a lot to do there. There's a lot of comedy in the ancient world. And there's always the thing which people love, which is taking issues of today and putting them in the ancient world and doing a spin on it that way. So I think absolutely that is something. I think that is the most something so far.
I love it. And there would be no phones, right? So that would in itself
there would be
a
no
thing.
Phones,
I mean, I pitched a thing that was basically. And I don't know how close I ever was to selling it. It seemed like Showtime liked it, then they didn't do it. But the idea was, it's this medieval comedy. It was kind of this, but it was in like a Game of Thrones type world rather than an ancient Rome type world. But basically, over the course of the pilot, like the sort of end of the first episode was, you think that this has been in the past, but then you learn that this is in Studio City, 1200 years in the future, and that something has happened that's so fucked up the world that it is now the future, but it's exactly like medieval times because the world as we know it was destroyed.
Oh, I like that.
And that this guy is basically like,
I love this.
He's fleeing from all these people because of some stuff he did that happened. And he's digging this hole like to bury himself in. Like he's just like, I don't want them to kill me. So I'm just going to like bury myself alive.
Oh my God.
And die. So because what they're going to do to me is worse. And as he's digging this hole, he just digs up an iPhone 7.
Yeah.
It was just buried.
Dude.
And it somehow, there's enough of a grid. Like there were these towers. They didn't know what they did, but there's basically like a cell tower
this
that because it's a satellite is still functioning. And that this thing, like he has a cell phone.
Yeah,
I love that.
But he's in the medieval times. But it's I wrote that. I mean,
that is so
planet. It's a little Planet of the Apes. It's a little The Gods Must Be Crazy.
Yeah,
that's very funny. That's a great idea.
Oh my
but
God.
That's when you say no phone. I mean, it's funny because I did
how you
rush
introduce a phone.
There is
like,
a phone.
Well, there's one phone,
yes,
and this guy has
that.
It. And so then he starts like. He's able to look stuff up and people are like, he's an oracle. He's because he knows all this stuff. And it's like, how did you know that? And it's because he has Google.
they don't know
funny.
About it yet.
He's the only person with it.
That's right. Funny. Well, you got to repitch that at some point. Now, yeah. I hate to cut this short. I got an outline notes meeting in 11 minutes. So
okay.
Those are all great. Is the somethings? I think they were all something, but I do think
for sure
that last one is the most something,
one.
And we could talk about that. We didn't even get a chance to pitch on your curb more, but I do think there's something there as well. That was fun, and now another fun part of the show: top five. Oh yes, we sound gorgeous. Okay, so this was mine this week, and this was top 5 days of your life.
Wow.
So this was fun to think about.
Yes,
fun
it
to
was.
Think about. Okay, number 5 for me, and I tried to get the exact dates on most of these. I couldn't quite do it. But number 5 for me was, I believe it was November 7th, 2020, Biden beats Trump. I think that was just a fucking great day. I remember I was in Western Massachusetts in the Berkshires. I was eating lunch with Tal and the news came through and people in the streets were cheering, honking.
Wow.
That was cool. Just a great, I felt so relieved. It was just like, oh, of course now it's as stressful as ever, but back then it felt like the stress was gone.
Yeah.
Okay. So that was one of them. Number 4 for me, was my birthday in 2004. Mm. Happened to be the day that, I was told that I got the job here at Family Guy.
Oh,
so that was awesome. So that's been almost 20 years now. And it's
God,
the greatest
right.
job. I love that. Number 3 was February 3rd of 2002. The Pats won their first Super Bowl. And any Boston fan will tell you that Super Bowl win created a domino effect where not only did the Pats go on to win 5 more, but the Red Sox started winning. And I believe that first Super Bowl was the thing that really kicked the Red Sox's ass into high gear and said, we can't be second fiddle in this town. We have to like go out and get great players and start winning. So they did that. I love that.
Awesome.
Number 2, March 8th, 1999. It happens to be my dad's birthday. And it was the day that I got the job on Kilborn.
Ooh,
overlap.
Yeah. So that was just a great day. I remember, you know, because I was so desperate and doing nothing, needed it. It happened. That was awesome. Number 1, I don't remember this exact day, but it was in 6th grade. And on the same day, I made the basketball team. I was cast as Bilbo Baggins in The Hobbit, which our school play was, and we got out on vacation that day. I'll never, the
Unreal.
Feeling that I had on that day was just unbeatable. So that was number 1.
Wow. Right. Those are lovely.
JC, you're up.
Oh, okay. I don't have the dates. Oh,
doesn't
but,
matter. It's
okay.
Fine.
So my number 5 was singing One Day with Modest Yahoo at Central Park, full stage, while Stu was playing bass. I don't even know the year, but that was an incredible feeling, just full park, Central Park, and just, it was beautiful.
Awesome.
Number four, the day I was hired on SNL. Even though my experience wasn't great, it was definitely like a pinch me moment. And meeting up with Stu, my interview was 4.5 hours long.
Wow.
It was insane. Yeah.
Jesus.
They put me in the middle amongst all the guys to see how I would interact with them. And they hired me at the end of the interview.
Great.
Number three, the day I found out I got a scholarship to Berklee College of Music, which allowed me to go and pursue a different path in life.
Awesome. Awesome.
Number two, my City Hall wedding, which was before the wedding party, which was, we didn't realize how special it was going to be, but it turned out to be just a beautiful moment. So,
and what, you must know a date on that.
Yes, September 11th, 2009.
Oh.
Yeah, we chose it. We chose it on purpose because we had both been in New York. We wanted to associate it with something positive as
well. Happy anniversary.
Yeah, it was really nice. So, All right, my number one was the Saturday morning when Stu and I shared an Uber to SNL when he was playing in the house band, and we rode into work together, going to Berklee College of Music, riding into SNL together was one of the most incredible moments of our lives, careers, together.
That's awesome.
So, that's great.
Thank you. Yeah,
those are great days.
I'm just going to suggest, because we're doing this as top five, we skip High Note this week because we're also under time constraints, because I'm going to have to leave to get to work on time as well.
Ooh,
absolutely.
Okay. Okay.
Okay. So here are my top five best days. Similar to you, number five was the day I got the Craig Kilborn job.
Ooh.
Yeah.
It was a year after 9/11, and I had been trying to get a writing job for 7 years.
Wow.
I've been trying to work in comedy, and I knew when I got that call, I was a writer now and not a low-level IT employee.
Yeah,
right. That's awesome.
God.
Number four, and I don't have a date on this, but I know I was 19, was when I finally lost my fucking virginity.
Yeah.
Because it had been way too long and it was getting weird. And if it hadn't been then, I don't know when it was going to happen. So
way to go.
God bless that day. Number three was the Red Sox winning the 2004 World Series.
Woo!
Can't believe you didn't have that, but
I considered it.
It sort of made me change from a lifetime pessimist to just a sort of situation pessimist.
Nice. Awesome.
Title shift.
Yes.
Number two was my wedding day.
Yeah.
Nice.
Was there. October 3rd. You were there. And it was, looking back now, so many of those people have unfortunately passed away, but it was really getting everyone together in that one space, and looking back was amazing. And awesome. Number one is, I'm going to say, the birth of my first kid, not the second kid, because she came out being strangled by her umbilical cord, and it was not a great memory.
Right.
But my first kid came out, and we locked eyes, and I was the first person to see her, and then she went back in.
She said, no thanks.
Yep. And then popped out again. But it was like, we always have that connection because I was the first person to see her, which was so cool.
That
I can see you
so
getting
cool.
emotional.
I know,
I can see you getting
beautiful.
Emotional. Yeah, I would have stuffed every day with every day with Levy is just awesome. So
yeah, I mean, that's kind of hack to do that.
Yeah, yeah. So yes. Oh my God, I feel so liberated because we're not doing High Notes.
Those
today.
Were all High Notes.
Yeah,
those
that's
were
true.
All. Those yes. were 15 High Notes.
What's next week?
Next week's topic is the top five movies or TV shows you've never seen.
Okay, that's good. Oh wow. That list is already populating.
I
that's
love
good.
It.
I love that.
I love
that. All right. Well, thank you all for listening. Thank you two for being awesome.
Thank you.
And a reminder to men of a certain age to please
get
buttholes checked, because I'm now the face and ass. Wait, the music.
Left camera. Typical, disgusting.
See you next week.
We barely saw you this week.
That was fun.
And it stops right now.
You've got a friend in me, Daryl.